so blind. The saddest story told is when a young boy 12 years old tries to take his own life. We got to initiate a change of state. We got to eliminate all the hate. We gotta be weightless. We gotta be hateless. We gotta be weightless. We gotta be hateless. We gotta be. Sing it out, sister and brother, and join your hands with each other. Gotta start a movement of improvement. We can heal the world with love. Weightless. We gotta be hateless. We gotta be weightless. We gotta be hateless. We gotta be. I said, sing it out, sister and brother, and join your hands with each other. Gotta start a movement of improvement. We can heal the world with love.
Thank you guys so much. I'm Flo, and this is Ryan. Thank you so much.
The following is CKUW 95.9 FM original spoken word programming, created by volunteers in the community, made possible by generous listener support.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday, October 17th, and it's 3 minutes after 11:30. It's 11:33. You're listening to Dark Matter Defined on CKUW 95.9 FM. I'm Jordan Poitras. On this half-hour show, we will tackle recent discoveries, learning and research coming from the University of Winnipeg. I'll speak to students, their instructors, and hopefully we can learn about something we would not normally venture to discover. So on this episode, I spoke to Dr. Andrew Fry and three students about their physics research into dark matter. But before all that, let's take a look at science in the news and journal research. All right. In the Canadian Journal of Science, Mathematics, and Technology Education, researchers Judith Hillier, James De Winter, and John Twindle looked at the reasons why there are so few physics teachers in the UK. Researchers interviewed current physics teachers and asked how they entered the teaching profession and why they stayed. The study aimed to identify the decision that physics teachers made when first entering the teaching profession. The study found that physics graduates just never saw themselves as teachers. Some were quoted as saying they just were not geeky enough. Although no real conclusion was reached from the research, the authors recommend that education be paired with physics learning to promote the teaching careers. And this from CBC, a 46-million-year-old mosquito was found in northwestern Montana containing a full belly of animal blood. Well, it could be animal blood. The fossilized bug was found in a paper-thin piece of shale, which actually sat in someone's basement for 25 to 30 years, with a bunch of other rocks. We won't be cloning any dinosaurs from this treasure. First of all, it's just not old enough. And of course, we're not certain it is blood. There are many other possibilities, say researchers. That story from CBC. A study published in the journal Psychology of Popular Media Culture found that the more people text during the day, the less sleep they got during the night. The study looked at 83 first-year graduate students, measuring their health and cell phone texting habits. And they found that the more they texted during the day, the less sleep they got at night. Researchers suggest turning off your phone sometimes. And that was also from CBC. This is Dark Matter Defined. Before we go into the feature article, we will we're going to take a quick ad break, and then when we return, a look at dark matter.
Brought to you by Ecopia. Come visit us in the mezzanine level of the Bowman Student Center.
According to the IESO, 25% of heat energy is lost through windows. This can be easily prevented by putting plastic window covers over them to stop cold drafts from cooling your home. You can purchase these plastic window covers at a hardware store near you. For more energy-saving tips, check out IESO.ca.
Hi, this is Karen Taylor from Taylor & Young, and when we are in Winnipeg and we're done playing on a solar-powered rig, we turn that dial to 95.9, you know we are doing fine, with CKUW, community radio coming at you, with CKUW, the sound of all my people, it's true.
So I'm Dr. Andrew Fry. I'm starting my third year as a professor here at the U of W in the Department of Physics. And one of the things I work on is theoretical research related to dark matter in the universe, which we'll be talking about today.
I spoke with Dr. Fry and his three students who worked with him over the summer. The topic was dark matter.
In some ways it's easier to start by saying what dark matter is not rather than what it is. Which is to say that we have what we call the standard model of particle physics, which includes all the particles that we've actually been able to discover or produce.
The standard model of physics, which was developed in the early 1970s, dictates that all things around us are made of elementary particles. A simple and comprehensive theory that helps you understand all the hundreds of particles that make up matter and forces, with six quarks, 6 leptons, and 4 force-carrying particles.
Dark matter is not any of those particles. But what it is, or the evidence we have for it, is as we look around different places in the universe, we see evidence of more gravity than we can account for with all the normal matter or all the normal stuff.
The dark matter question first came about in the 1930s. Fritz Zwicky, an astronomer at the California Institute of Technology. Zwicky was looking at the Coma Cluster, a cluster of 1,000 galaxies that stretches 2 degrees across the sky. That's the width of your thumb if you hold it out and look at the sky. Zwicky made some calculations using Newton's law and measured the light output of the billion stars and compared it to a nearby Captain stellar system, and found that the mass of the Coma Cluster fell short of the mass of from one Captain star. This meant that there was a lot more matter in that cluster than could be seen with his telescope. Of course, Zwicky made this discovery a little early for other astronomers and physicists to be concerned with this dark matter problem.
Probably the best piece of evidence, or the most familiar one, is that if we look at the speed of stars moving around in galaxies, we can use, you know, Newton's law of gravitational attraction and all you learn in sort of your first year physics courses and figure out, well, okay, if the star is moving around the galaxy as fast as we see it moving, or as we see them moving, then there has to be so much matter holding that galaxy together. But that's really about almost 5 times as much matter as we can account for among all the normal matter.
Dr. Frey's work is to look for dark matter by using current and creating new models. 3 students also had the opportunity to help answer these questions over this past summer.
Hello, my name is Gabriel Chernitsky. I'm starting my 3rd year as a student here in the Faculty of Physics.
Hi, my name is Jared Entz. I am entering my 5th year in the Physics Honors Program here at U of W.
Hey, my name's Nick Reed. I'm a 5th-year physics honors major.
Gabriel, Nick, and Jared worked on 3 different projects, all of them building on what is known. Let's start with Gabriel.
Dark matter annihilating, basically. To give you a brief background, my research is some things that have been investigated since the 70s. I'm talking about many satellites have been observing the center of our Milky Way, trying to pick up, you know, radiation signals. And what's been found out is that at our galactic center, there's this, like, spike, this really strong signal of about 511 kilo electron volts, which belongs to the far end of the electromagnetic spectrum, as in we have these gamma rays coming in from the coming out of the galactic center.
That is what physicists have been looking at for the past while. However, Gabriel is looking elsewhere.
So we can even calculate, you know, how many, like, electrons and positrons have to be produced in this galactic center to account for so much gamma radiation. And, you know, if we calculate that, we can find a really huge number of positrons being made. So now we have to ask ourselves, okay, so we know what's making all this gamma radiation, it's these positrons, but what's making all the positrons?
What Gabe says is fact is how particles in the center of our galaxy, electrons and positrons, sometimes annihilate each other and release this gamma radiation.
For a while now, people have been looking into dark matter as an explanation for the abundance of positrons.
So we have some signal coming from astrophysics measurements. In this case, it's something that's been around 41 years now. And people have come up with all sorts of explanations with normal astrophysics, but you know, they can't agree that there's any particular one that's really great because they all have problems.
Dr. Fry says it's a good idea to look at other places near our own galaxy to test the theory of dark matter producing positrons at the center of the Milky Way.
This summer, I've dealt with 3 different models of dark matter where dark matter is either annihilating with itself to produce this positron and electron pair, or it might be just colliding, you know, 2 dark matter particles might collide against each other. They're changing energy levels, and then they go to this unstable level where they want to shake off, you know, all the instability, and that energy flips the particle in the form of an electron and positron pair. And I tried to find a gamma ray flux in nearby galaxies. Nearby galaxies are sometimes called satellite galaxies. They're very small, so they're given the name dwarf galaxies. They're known to have a large density of dark matter. So our thought was that, okay, so, you know, let's say the theory, we have this theory that, you know, dark matter is the cause of this, all this gamma radiation in the Milky Way. And we know that there is this dwarf galaxy is known to have a large density of dark matter. So if dark matter really produces gamma radiation, we should be able to measure flux in these dwarf galaxies and find, you know, like a reasonable amount of gamma radiation if dark matter is the one responsible.
Nick actually laid some groundwork for Gabriel to do this work 2 summers ago.
So as Gabe said, he was looking at the gamma ray flux coming from different galaxies, satellite galaxies and stuff like that. Last summer I did similar calculations, but for the Milky Way galaxy. I mean, that's our galaxy. It's a lot easier to see than the satellite galaxy. So we made sure that it worked first for the Milky Way galaxy, and then Gabe kind of expanded on to other galaxies.
So all the work that physicists are doing is all related, and everyone builds from one another.
Nick did a lot of that normalization work, I guess, in a way, a year ago, by, you know, again, sort of figuring out what particle physics numbers do you need to get the right amount of the signal from our galaxy, but then applied it to actually the oldest things that we can look at in the universe, called the cosmic microwave background, and ask, okay, if the dark matter could have produced the positrons and electrons then, would that have changed anything that we see? Therefore, does that say, okay, should we see something because of these dark matter models, or can we rule them out? Yeah, I mean, it's all tied in and interrelated, and it's based on, you know, things that I've done in the past with other colleagues. There's a lot of incremental work, I think that the thing is, though, like, it's an important enough problem, there are enough people working on it that you sort of feed off of each other and interact.
Yeah, and all the data that we look at, too, comes from, you know, satellite signals and stuff like that. We don't look at the satellites ourselves or anything like that. So,
a lot of the experiments make their data public. Sometimes it's because the government that funds them says, okay, well, we're paying you a lot of money, so you have to let everybody use your data after a certain period of time. Sometimes it's just because they say, well, it's better for science if everybody can use our information. And in the case of what Nick did, we actually didn't even look at the data. We looked at other people's papers who had already analyzed the data and come up and said, okay, nothing can be happening beyond a certain point. And we just said, well, let's look at this point. The stuff Gabriel's doing, actually, we have a colleague in France who is actually going to look at the data from the satellite. Nobody apparently has ever really extracted this information about the particular other galaxies you want to look at. So our colleague's going to do that and see if we see anything. And nobody's ever done that before, so it's kind of exciting.
Jared looked at another part of the unknown physics objects.
What we call dark radiation. It just has no mass. It's light and it travels very, very fast.
Okay.
So we call these dark neutrinos because the neutrinos in the standard model are almost massless and tend to travel relativistically. Previous research has given rise to certain constraints on dark matter, as everybody has mentioned already. And so there's a certain number, a relic abundance of dark matter that we know there must be. And basically this number, you can relate it to, you can plot it as a function of this theoretical mass of the dark matter. So basically, if you have dark matter of some mass, you know how much the abundance should be. And so there has been experimental evidence on Earth and just in various experiments and stuff that give rise to a relatively light dark matter mass, around 20 times the mass of the proton, about. But if we have this mass, it means that the amount of dark matter that we would get isn't quite enough. There needs to be something else that creates this stuff, right? Basically, there's a gap on our plot. So we were like, something has to fill the gap. And what fills the gap? Well, perhaps this dark radiation, the friends of the dark matter. And so what we then did with these dark neutrinos is we took a model and we checked and said, hey, can can these guys fit into the model? Can we? Does this model have evidence for? Can it explain? Can dark radiation be implemented into it? So we tested this through a number of decays, annihilations, you know, a whole bunch of processes, and basically found out, well, the model did not look like it supported dark neutrinos.
There's nothing wrong with having the dark neutrinos, I guess, but there weren't going to be enough of them left over after the whole evolution of the universe to be anything that we would see today. So, in one sense, it was good for the model as written down, because there wasn't any contradiction with any experiment, but at the same time, it would have been kind of cool to have a new prediction to say, okay, well, if we look here, we should see something else, and unfortunately, that didn't happen. If we're asking, you know, how much of different kinds of particles or stuff like us, you know, there is in the universe, you have to ask, okay, where does it come from? And to understand that, we need to trace through the history of the universe and everything that happened at different times and different temperatures. And so, yeah, what Jared was doing was, you know, looking back in some of the earliest moments of the universe. If we take this hypothetical model of new kinds of particles, how much of them would we be left with?
And last, Nick looked at another beam of light at a much higher energy, like Gabriel did.
So my research was sort of, I worked with Dr. Fry. We set up a model of dark matter, and we set up all these different kinds of rules and stuff that allow the dark matter to produce those light particles.
Nick, along with Dr. Fry, is attempting to build a new model of particle physics.
We definitely got to some sort of conclusion, and at the start of the summer, we weren't really sure what it was going to look like. We were uncertain about the whole project. But by the end, we got some decent-looking results. We still actually have quite a bit of work left to do with it, and so I'm going to be continuing my honors project with it, it looks like, for this school year.
So I'm not going to lie. A lot of what we talked about flew right over my head. I actually sat down with the four for well over an hour. It all seems really daunting. Dr. Fry wanted to ask his students his own question, of course. What kept them interested in physics? What do they get, personally, out of the research they do?
It's really crazy for me to think about how, like, you know, we're just like a tiny speck in space, and that there's so much out there to, you know, see, investigate, and explore. So to me, you know, just to learn a little bit more about this, like, dark matter, just to get a little bit more wisdom, is it's a great opportunity. I like learning, and to be able to, you know, work alongside a professor and these other students in this research has been a great opportunity. So this is something I want to continue, you know, learning more about dark matter, more about space. This is something I definitely want to do, you know, for the foreseeable future.
It's the learning. I don't know. I took, when I was not wholly in physics, I kept wanting to go back. I wanted to go back. The reason I came back to it was wanted to know more, and I was disappointed when I wasn't learning, and I was like, ooh, you know, there's this, there's general relativity yet, there's classical mechanics yet, there's dark matter, right? There's all these things, and so that's what, you know, this summer research opportunity with Dr. Fry was just wonderful, because, and on top of everything, instead of paying to take a course, you're being paid to learn, right? It's like the best double win. I don't know, like, it's a win-win situation, knowledge-wise, you know. It's a win all around. I started out in education, and so, you know, working in the classrooms, you're like, it's fun to tell, sharing, and, you know, getting excited about what you know. But then you're like, okay. And then, you know, you do that for 4 months, and you're like, well, wait a second. You've kind of plateaued what you know, and if you're just spilling everything out, eventually you're going to go down.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, I mean, I'm in my fifth year of physics. I've taken a lot of courses here, almost every course there is, and just sifting through all different courses, I found out what I like, and just doing this research, too. Last summer was the first time I got to work with particle physics, and it really opened my eyes. I really enjoyed doing particle physics, and I mean, now I've had 2 summers of doing it, which is pretty cool.
You got enough?
Local music, independent voices. CKUW 95.9 FM.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dark Matter Defined on CKUW 95.9 FM. This is a relatively new show, just getting off the ground, and, well, it's a lot harder than I thought it'd be. Usually I'm used to doing a one-hour program, People of Interest, which is news, and this is only a half hour, and it's a thousand times more difficult to get all that together. I mean, like, that last piece you heard, I don't know how much time I spent on it. A lot. And it only lasted 16 minutes, and it didn't sound nearly what I wanted, nearly how I wanted it to. But, c'est la vie. So, I guess we're kind of done. So, thank you to Dr. Andrew Farai and Gabriel Tunitsky and Nick Reed and Jared Enns for speaking to me. Also, since this is a new show and I'm looking for ideas, and, well, you probably have some, you should email darkmatterdefined@gmail.com to tell me what you think and to send me some ideas. You've been listening to Dark Matter Defined on CKUW. Stay tuned for The Metal Lunchbox.
Wetlands are wastelands. Actually, swamps, marshes, and other wetlands are among nature's most important and complex ecosystems. They're like jungles filled with an amazing diversity of plant and animal life. Without wetlands, some of these species would disappear. Wetlands are important for people too. They filter water to remove harmful materials. They absorb and release water to ease flooding and help relieve dry periods. Canada has a quarter of the world's wetlands, but many are being lost, drained so that the land can be used for other purposes. Let's do what we can to protect wetlands. Stay on walking trails to avoid damaging these fragile areas. Observe, but try not to disturb, wetland wildlife. Join a wetland conservation group. And that's just a start. To learn more about wetlands and how you can help protect them, visit hww.ca.